satisfy you.
Welcome to Notcast, episode 357, Water is a Sandwich. So, last week, actually a few weeks ago, when we had our discussion...
A sandwich has bread, Anakin?
No, a Pop-Tart is a sandwich. Anything could be a sandwich if you think about it hard enough. A water is an oxygen atom with two hydrogen atoms sandwiched between it, on either side of it. Therefore, water is a sandwich.
That's right.
So, I'm Saverin, the sandwich, the chaotic sandwich.
Chaotic sandwich?
Yeah.
I'm Shiva. I don't know. I guess I'm the sandwich under the couch or something.
covered in, like, spare shed dog hair.
Cat hair.
Dust. You're bunnies. The emergency backup sandwich.
I'm pretty sure that there's a ton of hair ties underneath my couches because the cats steal them all the time.
This is how you like, save yourself if you're ever in a position where you're trapped, is you build a new animal out of all the shed fur of your various pets, and you attach your phone to it and send it out to go find help.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's sort of like there's a Red Dwarf episode where Crichton makes a little crawling hand robot with his hand, like he's trapped somewhere, so he pops out an eye.
Yes,
and puts
I
an
remember
eye.
That.
Okay, yeah. It's cute and creepy at the same time.
That was a fun show.
Mm-hmm. I love Red Dwarf.
And I'm Fuzzwolf, and I guess I'm a huge nerd.
Yeah, we're all a bunch of huge nerds, and it's actually been a pretty cool week for nerd news.
Nerd news! Nerd news!
Nerd alert! Nerd alert! This is something that happened literally the day after we recorded. It was last Friday, right? Or no, it was last Saturday. It was during Wimbledon, for whatever reason. They announced the new doctor.
Which is relevant to Fuzz's interest.
Oh, it's actually Sunday.
It was Sunday?
Yeah. They put a trailer out with the number 13 everywhere. And I never realized.
Yeah, I saw that.
After Wimbledon on Sunday, you'll find out who the new doctor is.
Yeah.
And, like, I slept late that day because I'd been up. And so I get up, I stretch, I look at my phone because, I mean, looking at the fresh horror device when you first wake up is just what we do in the 21st century. And I see I have a Twitter app and I look at it. It's one of my followers is like, Twitter is exploding with Doctor Who news. Has anybody checked in on Fuzzwolf? Whose turn is it? And I was just like, oh, okay. So I just opened Google and said, who is the 13th Doctor? And it told me. And I looked and I was like, okay, I don't recognize the name right off the bat, which I kind of expected that it was someone that would not be a household name in the U.S. Because very often is not someone that, you know, like Matt Smith was really not well known at all when he became the doctor.
Neither was Capaldi, I don't think.
Eccleston was more so.
Eccleston had been in some movies. Capaldi was actually known for being in the thick of it. It's Malcolm Tucker. And I watched that show eventually, but I actually knew Capaldi from the Doctor Who episode he was in. He played the Roman in the episode where they go to Pompeii. Which was a 10th
yeah.
Doctor and Donna episode.
I remember that episode.
And I also knew him from being the best thing about Torchwood Children of Earth, which was a 5-part miniseries.
It was really bad.
You know, I kind of enjoy all of Torchwood. I'm just like, eh. You know, people didn't like the ending, obviously, because of the character death involved. But for those who don't remember, Peter Capaldi played John Frobisher, who was a civil servant. And when the government decided that, you know, we're going to give X number of children to the aliens to take with them, but we need someone in the government to make the sacrifice of their own children. Otherwise, we'll have a revolt. We have to show that that the government isn't above the law. But of course, this is the Prime Minister telling him this. Of course, it's not going to be my fucking children. So basically, we've picked you. So his character is being told, you have to be the one, you and your wife have to make the sacrifice of giving your two young daughters to the aliens, and there's just this amazing final scene where he takes a gun and he goes home and he, you know, he tells his family to all meet in the bedroom, and you just hear gunshots. Like, he didn't do it.
Yeah.
He killed them all and himself. And he was in like every part of that, and like, I was like, whoever that guy is, he's a really good fucking actor. Not knowing years later he would be the Doctor, and I'd absolutely love him in the role. And then I went back and I found In the Thick of It and watched the actual role he was known for. But the new Doctor, Jodie Whittaker.
Yep.
And I looked up her name, and then I recognized one of the things she was in is Broadchurch, which is three seasons. It is a police procedural in a small English coastal village.
Does it have
Tennant
in it?
Yeah, it actually
has... Where he constantly eats in it all the time?
Yes. It already has multiple Who connections. So David Tennant is the main character, but the vicar in the town is played by Arthur Darvill, who played Rory in Doctor Who. And Jodie Whittaker plays Beth Latimer. She's the mother of the boy who was killed in season one.
I watched like most of season one, and it's one of those ones where I need to keep, and I just, you know how you're watching a show, you really enjoy it, and for some reason you just stop?
I've had that happen.
And it's like, why did I stop? I was really liking it, and then you have a hard time picking it up again.
Yeah.
For whatever stupid reason.
Like, I haven't watched seasons 2 and 3 yet, but I'm thinking of picking them up. So it's like, oh, and the thing is that Broadchurch was created and written by the guy who is the new showrunner for Doctor Who after Stephen Moffat steps down.
Oh, really?
So that also explains the Jodie Whittaker connection, and before Chris Eccleston was cast as the Ninth Doctor, Russell Davies had worked with him on a miniseries called The Second Coming, where he played Jesus.
Yeah.
And
I hear that's really good. I haven't watched
Russell
it.
Davies had also written a miniseries called Casanova, which starred David Tennant as Casanova, and then he cast Tennant as the Tenth Doctor.
Kind of incestuous.
So it's one of those things that a lot of directors and writers will do. Like, if you look at Kevin Smith, and you see, like, how many actors from one movie to another will show up.
Well, that's because the View Askewniverse, man.
It's partially that, but it's also partially, like Michael Parks played the crazy reverend in Red State.
Oh.
And then he also plays the crazy guy in Tusk that turns Justin Long into a walrus. So, and Justin Long is also in Zack and Miri Make a Porno, which is also a Kevin Smith movie. So this is kind of common that this happened. So once I saw the connections, I was not surprised.
What does the showrunner actually do?
The showrunner is, back in the day, was called sometimes called the script editor.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically like, they're in charge of the overall arc of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Over the season and over their whole tenure of it. So they write the key arc episodes. Like, usually Moffat would write the opening two-parter, the two-parter season finale, and usually like a one-off or two in the middle, and then hire other writers to write the other episodes.
But he also dictates like this episode you have to hit like certain key points in each.
Right.
Yeah.
So you take like Matt Smith's first season, the idea of the crack and everything like that, that was Stephen Moffat. But Stephen Moffat didn't write the second episode, The Beast Below, but there's a crack in that at the end. So he would be the one who would be like, okay, and then you have to work this in. And with Russell Davies' time, he would be the one that would put like the Torchwood references throughout season one, even in episodes he didn't write. So the showrunner is in charge for the, almost like the way Drama the Board is in charge of the overall long-term development of Furry Fiesta, but the chairman is in charge of that one year. Yeah. A showrunner is in charge of the overall development of the season, but he doesn't have to write every single episode.
So kind of the fingerprints all over, like the steering guideline.
Yeah, like this is the general storyline that we want this season to tell.
Make sure you work in these points, and when you're doing this, make sure you work in this to foreshadow that.
It's like if you're the editor of an anthology that takes place in a shared universe, and you're like, this universe is established, and you have to have certain elements in it. These are the tools of the toy box that you can play with, but then everything else is up to your imagination. Mm. So a writer coming in is like, okay, Doctor, Companion, TARDIS, the general idea of the show, and these elements from my season, the producer season long story arc.
They kind of set the show Bible for that season.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Like what's his name? It was Whedon that did Buffy, right?
Yeah.
He probably had a Buffy show Bible, but he didn't write every episode of Buffy. But every episode, the characters have to be in character.
Yeah.
You know? So it's a lot like being an editor. Like, if you're like, whoa, the Doctor does something really out of character in episode 8, that would be something that hopefully the showrunner would catch before it starts filming, that kind of thing.
Mm.
So
he shot an alien and teabagged it.
He doesn't do that. He would do something else, and he might metaphorically teabag it, but you know.
No, I want Peter Capaldi crouching and grazing his balls against the alien's face, or I can't write the series.
But what's interesting is that you can kind of tell in not just Capaldi's last season, this one. It's been very obvious in season 10, but it's also been there in prior years as well. So first, Moffat introduces Missy as a female incarnation of the Master. And I truly believe that was them...
Missy, Mistress, Master, I see.
Yes, that was them kind of trying to soften up the audience to the idea of, you know, a Time Lord can regenerate into a different gender. And they'd already introduced that idea previously, but that was the first time they had brought in a major character and actually played that out. And then you see how that plays out. And then there's an episode late in season 9 where the... I don't know if you guys remember from the 50th anniversary or any other episodes, there was...
A general dude?
A general on Gallifrey was a white man, bald, older guy, and he regenerates into a younger black woman.
Yep.
So they did not only a gender flip, but a race flip. And she gets up afterwards and she's like, oh, back to normal, am I? Oh, for only time I've ever been a man. How do you deal with the ego? To establish that character that we've only known as a male this whole time he's been on screen has actually been a female character her whole life, except for that one incarnation at that point. So they were kind of trying to get that idea more cemented. It was already there sort of in theory, and then it was kind of cemented. And there's a lot of lines towards the end where, you know, the Master says something like, so is it going to be all girl in the future? And 12th Doctor says, you can only hope so. And then, of course, it's going to end with him regenerating to his first female incarnation.
So
there's also a really cute...
The next one after that, he has to be a ginger.
Yes. Or the other thing is that... Okay, so the thing I really like about the introduction of Jodie Whittaker is when they introduced Peter Capaldi, it was an hour-long, like, pageant on the BBC... Where they're like, okay, it's the new Doctor special, and they...
Are you fucking ready? Well, we're going to talk about the history of Doctor Who for like an hour.
Exactly. They fuck around for like 40 minutes telling you all this other stuff and about the casting process and all that. And then at the end, they're like, it's Peter Capaldi! And he comes out, and then they do an interview and stuff like that. But what they did with this one was you just see the back of the Doctor... walking through the woods and far enough away that the face is blurred, in the background. And what I like is that it looks like the Doctor is wearing 12's outfit, because you have long black coat, black boots, black hoodie with the hood pulled up. You don't even see a lock of hair out of place. There's like no hint whatsoever. And Tyrion was really impressed with this. He's like, look how much they're fucking with people. Like, you cannot tell. Everything is perfect. And then, you know, she reveals herself towards the end. But that's not 13's actual costume. They actually asked her that in the Q&A. Like, that's mostly 12's costume. So we don't really know what 13's going to look like when she's actually playing the Doctor full time. So now, she's been a ginger in other roles that she's had, so I don't know if she'll still be blonde when she starts filming her full season or whatever.
She could be like, well, I'm blonde, but I can dye that shit. I'll be a fake ginger. It's all right. That would be weirdly funny if they make that comment.
I can't imagine the Doctor actually doing that, because, like, the Doctor's never cared about
hair
color before. Yeah.
There's just that one comment of a not a ginger in one of the...
Yeah, yeah. Well, Tennant was really upset at that, and then when Eleven came in and he pulls his hair down, he says, I'm still not ginger.
Yep.
But,
it's been a few hundred years in the Doctor's lifetime by that point. He probably doesn't care that much.
Yeah, but I really liked the short, minute-long teaser and reveal instead of this hour-long kind of thing. Because, I mean, really, all we want to know is...
Who's the Doctor?
Jodie Whittaker is the 13th Doctor. That's all we want to know.
Yeah.
You know? And then the rest of it, her character, we'll find out when season 11 starts
airing. I love the BBC's response to basically people bagging on the 13th being a woman. Well, just as she killed it in the her casting, whatever, deal with it. She was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, story I was telling Saverin, which this goes into a little bit more. Like, if you're not heavily knowledgeable about the classic series of Doctor Who, here's the background. So, what I thought was really cool was, like, I follow, like, Peter Davison is occasionally active on Twitter, but not really active. Colin Baker is quite active on Twitter. He plays number 6.
Mm-hmm.
And a bunch of companions are active on Twitter. And not only, like, from the 2005 on episodes, but classic series companions just overwhelmingly, like, you know, really cheering and saying, welcome to the Doctor Who family and stuff like that. Like, Joe Grant's actress, Perry, Martha.
I wish they did more with Martha. I really like Martha as a companion. A lot.
I'm trying to remember some of the others. I think Sophie Aldred as well. But in particular, the Sixth Doctor was very irritated at people complaining about the gender thing. And he had tweeted something like, she is the Doctor, whether you like it or not. And that's not just a random salty comment from him. He's actually paraphrasing one of his own lines from his first episode in Doctor Who. At the end of the episode where Perry, his companion, is still not quite sure because she's seen him change from 5 into 6. And he turns to her and says, I am the Doctor, whether you like it or not. And then he kind of smiles, and then she smiles, and then end of episode. So for him to, like, paraphrase a very classic line from the show. Like,
from him.
From him, yeah. Because, you know, I've met Colin a couple of times. I've seen him do Q&As. He really is a great guy, and he's a great ambassador for the show, and he loves the fans, and... Like, he's just a good dude, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't read the article yet, but one of the companions linked to retweeted it. Apparently, he's written a blog post about this issue. And it's just great that so many...
To see past doctors behind it.
See past doctors and past companions totally behind this. And he's And the article title was, "I was Doctor Who, and I fully support the new Doctor." Something like along those lines.
So. Great. I mean, it makes me like, cool, I'm going to check it out. I like Capaldi. I'll probably like the new Doctor.
Yeah, and I have this thing where, like, I always absolutely fall in love with the current Doctor. And I don't want them to leave. And then I see who's next, and then I start looking forward to who's next. And the thing I really like what they did this time was they waited until the end of Capaldi's season to announce who 13 would be. Because, like, for 11, like, no, for when 10 stepped down, we knew about Matt Smith's casting for, like, the longest time.
Yeah.
You know.
I think it kind of foreshadowed, and I think it kind of dimmed the end, the kind of the end of 10's reign, just because
we already know who's going to
be. Right, and by the end of 10's reign, I was getting sick of 10. Because
I really like 10.
So I liked him mostly, but his last few episodes are definitely not his strongest, and he becomes kind of a whiny bitch.
And it's, I think the angle is, when you're still invested in the character, and you can't look ahead to be like, oh, this is the next person, I can't wait to see what they do.
Right, yeah.
It's like, alright, we finished Capaldi's run, he's still going to be in the Christmas special, he's going to regenerate then, but we didn't know who the next Doctor was going to be until his run.
His run completed.
Yes.
And and Capaldi has one episode left, and it's the Christmas special, and while ideally, I would love for him to regenerate, and you see who the Doctor is, and they get a second of screen time, and then it puts up their name. That would be awesome. I would love the surprise of the Doctor regenerates, and it's a total surprise what the next incarnation looks like.
That would be great. I love that. And I kind of got that in the original series when I didn't have as much social media.
Right.
And blah, blah, blah. It's just kind of this, a change. And I had... It had filmed long ago, but it was still new to me.
Yeah.
And then suddenly they became somebody else.
Yeah.
And I didn't have that whole expectation. It was just a reveal, and it was a really nice reveal.
Yeah, and that's something from watching the show in America growing up that we have. I mean, it would be... It lit up the British press whenever the new Doctor was cast back then, too. But watching it on PBS before the internet... Like, yeah, we didn't have any of that knowledge. I would have loved for them to have done that, but I completely understand that the 21st century, the age of marketing, and it being a bitch and a half to keep a secret in the BBC, that they have to have a reveal, and they have to capitalize on the reveal to keep interest in the show and to do the marketing and stuff like that.
I think that they could build the reveal as being a big deal too. I mean, I think that they could. I think it's got enough steam now that they could market it as a "ooh, new one's coming. Watch the Christmas special to see who it is."
Yeah.
You know, I think that they could pull that off now, and they might do that at the end of Jodie's. I mean, I could hope.
It's one thing that was interesting actually is if you looked up before the announcement, what the bookies were saying, like there was an actress from Broadchurch that a lot of people thought was going to be the Doctor. And she's Tennant's co-star. I think she's the actress that plays his partner in the show. And apparently they put out some misinformation. Like, they kind of talked her up, and she sort of played coy in interviews, you know. But she's apparently insanely busy doing a bunch of other shit, and it was never going to happen anyway. But they sort of had you looking over here in close to the right direction, like right show, but wrong person. And I think that kind of threw some speculation off. So it was still kind of a surprise for people. So, I'm perfectly happy with it. I've been a fan of the show since I was 4 years old. You know, I've seen, obviously, many doctors. And I love all of them in different ways. And I just love the character overall. So, I mean, I'm fine with this. My personal hope was that Richard Iowade, I can never pronounce his last name.
Mm-hmm.
He's the he's black actor. He was in the IT Crowd.
Yeah.
He's the tall, skinny, nerdy guy.
Oh, he would have been great.
With he has like the big hair.
The fluffy hair.
Yeah, like he would have been. I think he would have been like a super as a quirky, almost Tom Baker-ish sort of incarnation. And now, hopefully, maybe he'll get it in the future, and he'd be their first actor of color. To play the character.
And I'm still torn as I like Pertwee or if I would like Baker as my favorite doctor. I mean, I love Pertwee.
What's funny, the actor I was talking about, I saw one of his tweets. He's like, can't wait till after Wimbledon to find out if I'm the new Doctor Who. And that would be my advice to any major actor or actress in Britain. When the Doctor is being cast and you're interviewed or anyone thinks that you're going to play the part, be as coy as possible, fuck with people, keep people guessing.
Yeah.
You know, and like, yeah, clearly some people had fun with it.
And I look forward to it. I mean, and I bet her coats will have pockets.
Going by past incarnations, there will also be dimensionally transcendental pockets. Do you remember that David Tennant Christmas special where he pulls out this massive, massive game controller from his coat pocket? It's like he's controlling some kind of robot thing. I don't remember what it was. And I think Donna asks him how the hell he got that in his pocket. He goes, "They're bigger on the inside."
Nice. So that's, I mean, Doctor Who. That's exciting. New Doctor. And coming out next year, I guess?
They haven't announced when season 11 is going to start. So we have the Christmas special will be on Christmas Day. If things go to tradition, Capaldi will be in the whole episode on Christmas and then regenerate at the end of it. And the new Doctor might get a line or two right at the end and then the credits will roll. They haven't announced when season 11 is airing. She's probably filming already. I'd be surprised if they weren't already doing that.
Is the current companion sticking around?
If I told you that, it would spoil the end of the season.
Ah, then I haven't seen anything, so I don't know. Okay.
He has two companions in season 10. Yes. Bill, black lesbian, first established homosexual companion. It's been very cool seeing a lesbian in the show.
Well, no. Does Jack count as a companion, or is he...
Okay, so first lesbian.
Okay.
Jack is... Something. He's described as omnisexual because he's from the 51st century. So you go beyond the human gender spectrum because he hooks up with aliens, too.
As long as it passes the Harkness test.
That's where the term Harkness test
comes from. I love the Harkness test.
Yeah. But he was also, he's in a scattering of episodes. Bill was the de facto companion the entire season.
Mm-hmm. All of season 10. She was going around time and space with him.
And her relationship off and on is sort of, becomes integral to the plot of the show. And, you know, it's not mentioned in every fucking episode. That's what, like, homophobes will be like, oh, they're shoving the gay agenda down her throat. No, it's just kind of, it's established that she likes girls, you know? And it's not really beaten over the head with it. And, like, and I don't even know if she's gay in real life or not. It doesn't really matter. It'd be cool if she was to give a gay role to a gay actor. But no, I really liked her in it. She was really good. And, yeah, having that little extra there was nice. And also, Nardole is the other companion. He's played by an actor named Matt Lucas, mm-hmm. who is gay in real life. So I don't know if he's the first out gay actor to play a companion. Well, no, he's not, because Jack is gay in real life, too. But and Nardole sort of is probably kind of asexual in the show.
He's an android, isn't he? Say.
Sort of. I think he's a cyborg. They don't really go into exactly how he works, just that he's not human.
Mm-hmm.
In an early episode, he has like a bolt falls out of him.
He's like, oh dear.
And it's Bill's first episode, and she turns around, and he just kind of shuffles it behind him with his foot. You guys should watch season 10, actually. It's been a really good season. Season 9 was really good. Season 10's been really good.
The only episode I got to see this season was the one while we were at HavenCon.
Yes, which is also awesome, because they go back in time, like Victorian times. And what I love about Doctor Who is that it also touches on some social issues. So, if I didn't mention it earlier, Bill is black, and they go back in time, and she's like, hello, melanin, is this going to be an issue? You know, going back to like 18-something.
Yeah.
And like, 12 barely notices what people look like. There's that whole joke about him not being able to tell how old Clara was.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, oh, you're not a young woman anymore. Yes, I am. Oh, it's too late. You've already taken off your makeup. No, I haven't. Oh, you probably just missed a bit. Things like that. But they go back in time, and like the first thing they do is they encounter a racist. And this guy is like, Bill is sitting down. He's like, how dare you not rise in the presence of your betters, or some shit like that. And 12 just has just lectured Bill on not making a scene and on being very diplomatic, because this is a different time and you have to be very, very genteel, basically. And as soon as this guy insults Bill, 12 hauls off and punches him and knocks his ass out. And it's just that someone made a looping gif of it. It's great. It's almost as much fun to watch as the Richard Spencer one.
Yep.
What was so there's Broadchurch, and what was the other one that Capaldi was in?
Oh, Torchwood, Children of Earth.
No. His main series that he was known for.
He wasn't in Broadchurch. That's David Tennant. The Thick of It.
No, The Thick of It.
Yeah.
Isn't there one where he's a vampire? A movie where Peter Capaldi's a vampire?
I mean, there might have been. He has a long filmography. I haven't seen all the things he's been in. No, there's one where David Tennant is. He's in the remake of Fright Night.
And I saw that one.
Is he the vampire or
no,
the vampire
Tennant,
hunter?
Tennant was the vampire hunter.
Okay.
And he was really good. There's one scene where he's like all dressed up. Because he was like a showman at like, I don't know. And then he goes back to his dressing room and he just kind of peels off all of his stage, whatever. And then suddenly he's like, oh. Oh, there you are.
Kind of like when you see Mad-Eye Moody in Harry Potter and he deactivates the spell or whatever. And it's David Tennant underneath. It's not Wormtongue. What's his character's name?
I don't even know.
Wormtail? Maybe?
That guy.
Yeah, you know who I mean in Harry Potter, yeah. Right? The Tennant played very briefly. And he's like, very strange looking and everything. But
I can't really remember that. I have to rewatch it.
Thick of It is definitely worth watching.
Well, I've already watched Fire Broadchurch. I knew that was Tennant. I meant the Capaldi one, so I'm sick of it. No, I just asked Dave to pull it down.
He plays a spin doctor in Downing Street.
Hmm.
So he has to do what spin doctors do, basically control the narrative. And his whole thing is just the absolute constant swearing. In really, really creative ways.
Mm-hmm.
And he was horrified early on in his Doctor Who career. Like, so what a lot of people do when an actor gets a new part, and they're like, they'll show a clip of them from something else that they've made, mm-hmm. and then they'll interview them, right? Well, Doctor Who is quote-unquote a children's show, or more broadly, a family show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember Tennant being on a panel comedy show that Stephen Fry was hosting, and they kept trying to get him to say something dirty. And he's like, I'm in Doctor Who, I'm not going to say that, you know? So, yeah, there's this thing that, like, okay, I'm playing the Doctor, I'm not going to go out
and be that.
You know, swearing and stuff like that. And this was, I think it was in Australia or something like that. And the clip they showed was like one of the ones that had the more vile sexual imagery.
Mm-hmm.
And he says this thing. He says something like, they're talking about containing leaks in the department. And he says something like, "Leaks, you're gushing like Gwyneth Paltrow dildoing herself at a special needs event."
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. And they showed this clip, and he is like in stunned silence for a moment.
You picked that one?
Like, holy shit, you picked that clip?
Like, hey, I'm the new doctor, your kid's favorite TV show.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like the swear trek.
There's this great scene where this other character is arguing with him. His character is Malcolm Tucker in the show. And she says something to him like, "Anything you do in this department is under my purview." And he goes, oh, it's under your purview. Well, you can take your purview and shove it up your arse with a lubricated horse cock.
Jesus.
And they're like, it's like, I told you to fuck off twice now, and you're still here. So what should you do? And the younger guy goes, F off. He's like, good son, you'll go far. What's neat is, do you remember Missy's little helper at the end of her first season that she ends up zapping?
Mm-hmm.
That actor, I don't remember his real name, but he plays a character called Ollie in The Thick of It.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he and Capaldi are in scenes together all the time in The Thick of It. And so it's kind of cool that he gets a guest spot in Doctor Who, but a lot of people were disappointed that they don't get a scene together in Doctor Who. But it's one of those things where, like, there's only so many good actors in Britain, so they have to be in everything, basically.
It's like they have a small pool of talent. They gotta just reuse them.
If the rest of the cast of Broadchurch shows up in Doctor Who in the next 2 years, I won't be surprised at all.
Yeah.
Anyway, we should probably talk about something other than Doctor Who.
So this has been the Doctor Who.
I gushed quite a bit about
it. This is Who first.
I think you might actually like Doctor Who.
I may have a bit of a problem, yes.
But you don't want it. So is this no longer a 12-step, it's now a 13-step program?
Well, the numbering gets a little bit wibbly there.
Yeah.
Timey-wimey too?
Yes, it does. Someone was like, oh, my only problem with the 13th Doctor is they're calling her the 13th Doctor. Isn't she like 14-ish at this point? They're like, no, we're not redoing the numbers after the anniversary special. She's mm-hmm. still 13.
So, in my neck of the woods, I signed up and got my ticket and room reservations and lined up for PAX South.
Oh, that was funny. So when PAX South tickets were going on sale, a bunch of the people in my office was waiting for it to go on sale because I work in an office full of nerds. And I'm like in the middle of the support pool, and I'm also, I kind of sit between two different pods of groups. I kind of sit on the end of a row, and I've got, they call them DevOps, which is basically the folks who do the really deep server configs, and when shit goes sideways, they're in of it. And there had been something going on, and they'd been trying to put a finger on what it was all day, and they were kind of in a lull where they were waiting to hear back from it to see if something had worked and hear back from a client. So they were like, can it hold off for PAX tickets go on sale in 3 minutes? Can they please, the servers stay stable for 3 minutes? So I can buy my PAX South tickets.
So, I bought mine an hour.
Back up just a little bit.
Okay.
Because previous episode, you had said, well, I, me personally, are on an episode that you were on the fence about going or not this year. So what made you decide to pick up a ticket?
Basically, if I don't end up going, I can sell my badge to somebody for cash. Because they're non-differentiated badges. They don't have names on them. They're a 3-day pass that I can trade to somebody or whatever.
So might as well pick one up while you have the
chance.
Yeah,
because
okay.
I got my badge and I got a quad occupancy room at the La Quinta I like to stay at in San Antonio. And if I get to go, cool. And if not, oh well.
Oh, speaking of San Antonio, are you guys going to the furry invasion?
Not planning on it.
I'm not planning on it, but my parents are going.
Okay. Well, I will see your parents down there.
Yeah. Well, again, this is one of those, they're just looking for an excuse to go to San Antonio for the weekend.
Oh, okay.
So they're just like, yeah, if we break even, that's cool. If we don't break even, whatever. We're going to get to spend time in San Antonio together for the first time in probably 30 years.
I think they'll probably break even at least. Because I think this event's going to turn out like Fiesta Year One, where it ends up being a little bit bigger than the organizers expect it to be.
Yeah, and the thing about PAX South is that there's still 3-day badges available today when they opened a few days ago. So that's cool. I mean, it's not exactly the biggest show. Yeah. Like, everybody's...
65,000 people, though, right?
Yeah. Well, it's not PAX West or PAX East. Mm-hmm. Like, you've got all the population centers on the East Coast, you've got all the game companies on the West Coast, and there's companies in Texas here, like BioWare and the like, but a lot of the bigger companies, like Riot, don't come and have representation here. So it's a lot of indies, a lot of the usual suspects, like... They had Frontier, who did Elite Dangerous. They had whoever was doing Dreadnought. They had Microsoft had a booth where they were showing off Gigantic. And this is from 2 years ago, so all these games have come out. And Nintendo has a booth, and Capcom has a booth. And, you know, it's the usual suspects, but it's
but
not...
it's cool that Nintendo and Capcom still bother.
Oh, yeah. A lot of the biggest companies still come and have a presence.
Yeah.
There's the requisite Twitch booth, because Twitch. Mm-hmm. And so you get a good chance to see a lot of indie titles. They have a pretty good tabletop board game stuff. They've got lots and lots of indies. And it's just a good fun time. I had a lot of fun the 2 years I was able to go. Missed out going on last year because reasons. And I've figured, you know, I know enough people that are going to go to this con that I bet I can fill up my room with people that I will want to share a room with. And I got a couple dudes that are like on my con staff that are on the fence, and they're like, yo, I'll let you know by the end of this weekend. I'm like, cool. And that's actually why I looked at the badges, and they're all still available. You can get 3-day passes or Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
And that's when we went down. I mean, you can go and buy one outside of it, because, you know, there's people outside with badges selling them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are they scalping them, or are they selling them at cover price?
I don't remember. We didn't engage them.
Yeah.
Because it's like, yo, fuck off, I'm keeping my badge.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I had fun, and I won't go if it's just by myself, but I have a couple dudes that I know are on the fence who may end up going, and I'd be able to split the room. Because, yeah. Again, if I split it four ways, it's only like $160 for the room and $80 for the badge, and then the rest is, you know, the event itself and food.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which, and anything you happen to pick up.
Yeah, if you're buying video games or swag, shirts.
So they do have a vendor's hall?
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They have it's basically just an exhibitor hall where they have all the games on display, but there's merch booths attached to most of the displays.
Uh-huh.
So yeah. You can get official Capcom merch with their displays of whatever the hell they're showing off.
Right.
Likewise, Frontier Developments, you could buy game code, you could buy the like shirts and hats. There's lots of board game companies that are selling their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
VR companies. There's companies that's like, yo, check out our line of PC accessories. And you mm-hmm. can buy them here.
Does that one big-ass company that goes to Acon every year that has that whole back wall go? Do you remember that when it was at the Sheraton in the exhibitor hall behind the Artist Alley? They would have like the entire wall of like miniatures and...
Oh, I'm sure that there is a board game or game company that does that stuff. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. And those guys do exist in the board game section. It's actually a separate area.
Okay. They're a local shop, though, aren't they? That comes out.
I believe so.
Dragon's Lair or something?
Yeah.
I would expect Dragon's Lair.
It's the one off up in Plano.
Madness,
I think.
Okay. Yeah, I was thinking Acon, but for PAX South, I'm pretty sure Dragon's Lair will have the table. Well, and like, Ellen at Radio will probably be working it.
Yep. Well, that was where we met dude from Haven Con. Fuck, what's his name?
Shane.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're like, hey, you should like the furries.
Yeah.
The furries are your friends.
Yeah, Haven Con's in kind of trouble. They're trying to do a big push right now, and it's not getting a lot of traction. Yeah,
they're just short of 50%, and they've only got like a day and a half left.
Yeah, so things are not looking great there. It's a lot bigger of a push than he usually does, so...
Yeah, usually he's like... You know, and I was kind of irritated with prior years, because he would do like 3 fundraisers throughout the year. And I was like, why are you doing that? Why don't you just do one big one? Well, now I know why. Apparently one big one doesn't have as much impact for that event as the smaller ones do. Because he used to do like one for like $8,000 or $10,000 for like the deposit or something like that. And then another one later on for something else or for guests or whatever.
It's like trying to raise the money for a convention all in one go, and it doesn't work that way. Like, for me... So, for Nightmare Nights, like, the funding starts when we open our badges in, like, March or April, and we end up with all the money we need, and hopefully more, by the end of the con weekend. So, like, generally, we're going into the weekend with not quite enough money to pay the hotel, but, you know, at-the-door sales, right?
Yeah.
So, trying to get your full funding amount right in one go...
This early, far out. For as niche
a event as HavenCon is,
yeah,
it's not a good look. Unfortunately, I retweeted it, and
yeah.
I had fun. We had a good time. You know, it was nice seeing Zia. We had a decent time vending in the vendor hall and talking to dudes and all that. And I actually had a couple of people that were like, "Yo, you know, asking me about Nightmare Nights and stuff." And so I don't know if that person got in, but. It was a situation where it was a fun little event, but I don't know.
I don't know if the model can hold up.
Yeah.
Mm.
They're a tiny, tiny convention trying to get people with appearance fees. Like, and appearance fees are rough if you're not careful.
Because, yeah.
Like, when I write my tell-all book about Nightmare Nights after it's all said and done, it's not going to be that long, because there's not a lot to tell, really. It's like, it worked out all right. Raised money for Kids with Cancers. It's over now. Bye. But that being said, I'm gonna get you guys in on a secret, because this episode is going to go up after the announcement goes public. We have a contract, and by the time this airs, it will be signed, and it will be announced and out there, that we've got Lauren fucking... Faust coming to Nightmare Nights for our last year.
Woo!
She's coming for Friday and Saturday only. You better show up and you better buy autograph tickets, and please don't creep her out.
And that was a double announcement, because I don't think you said on the show before that this is the last year.
Yep, but that's going to be the announcement we put out this weekend, so that'll be out before this episode comes out. That, yeah, this is the last year of Nightmare Nights. This is the last year of my involvement in the pony community, probably.
Yeah.
And basically, we're like, you know what? We're going to make this our last year. We're going to see if we can fucking pull it off. And we did.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. We got the contract.
We just announced he got Lauren Faust.
Ooh.
Yep.
I know. I heard.
We're going to throw Facebook money behind that shit. Like, that should help.
Yeah.
So, barring anything nightmarishly unforeseen, it'll be a big final year.
Yeah.
And you know, it's better to go out on top and still be profitable than linger out longer than you should be, and then realize, oh dear, there's no money left. We can't quite pay the hotel what we owe them. Whoops. Because that's happened a lot of times. That's happened with a lot of cons.
Not Nightmare Nights.
No, no, no. Never with us. But it's real easy to overstay your welcome in a single topic fandom.
In the spirit of people who enjoyed the first 2 seasons of the show and then kind of stopped paying attention, I'm going to be donating a couple of things to the charity auction.
Okay.
So if you're interested, San Diego Comic-Con Derpy from 2012, I think it was. So I'll donate my my copy of that, which she's never been out of the box.
Yep.
And I also have the DJ Pwn 3 Comic-Con exclusive with the little button that lights up and everything. Yeah. So it looks like they're going for between 50 and 100 on eBay. So I'll totally donate those to the charity auction and hope they get a couple of bucks.
Yeah, get Lauren to sign the derby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, get Lauren to sign it, and then it'll go for more in the charity auction.
Yeah, exactly. And again, it's just one of those things where, unlike Trek, unlike Star Wars or Doctor Who, like, it seemed like the vast majority of the fandom came in season 1, 2, 3, and then it all kind of filtered out. The people that start at the beginning, there's very, very few people involved in the fandom that were there from the beginning. And even me, I've seen like 4 episodes this season. And
is it just not as good, or are they...
There's really good episodes. I just don't care as much.
Right. I'm sure it's still a very good show.
It's been so long, and I was so hard and so deep into it for so long, that now it's just like, whatever. You know? But the episodes I have seen are really good. Like, there's an episode about Applejack's parents. That is basically like, yo, this is their Romeo and Juliet-ass love story, and it features the voice of William Shatner and Felicia Day.
We talked about this last episode.
Yeah, and so, like, it's a high-powered episode, and there's a conflict in it, but it's basically the Apple family kids, Applejack, Big Mac, and Apple Bloom, learning about their parents from the people whose lives their parents touched. Their parents' lives touched. So they talk about like Mrs. Cake, they talk to their family historian who was in like a season episode last season, they talk to one of her dad's best friends growing up, and they end up talking to the mayor, and they all have their own little story of how, you know, the Pear family, Apple family, they both had land then, but they were feuding because, of course, you know, their product wanted to be prime and the other one didn't, yada yada. But Pear Butter and Bright Mac, basically met as kids, and as they grew up, their families were feuding, but they were in love. And basically, the story is the character voiced by William Shatner comes back into town and basically has this massive pile of permanently unresolvable regret because he was not around and his daughter died and they were never able to make up. But he's back and he wants to reconnect with his grandkids.
That's sweet.
Yeah, it's this really sad episode that ends really sweetly and is not an episode that I would have expected to come from My Little Pony. But it's really good. And there's the episode with the Royal Sisters and them swapping duties thanks to Starlight's Deus Ex Machina abilities and how they perceive each other and they don't appreciate each other that much, and that, yo, you should actually communicate and appreciate your siblings because in your case, literally, they're all you got for the most part.
Right.
Now you've got Cadence and
because
Twilight.
All your other friends will die because you're immortal.
Yeah, pretty much.
You should appreciate your siblings because if you don't, they might go bad and try to overthrow your kingdom, and then you have to
in that episode, actually, Luna goes into Celestia's dream, and basically she has the same fears that she would fall to darkness and become a nightmare creature like Luna had. And so there's this battle where Daybreaker, the Nightmare Celestia, and Nightmare Moon basically have a laser fight.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. There's been some good episodes, but I'm not that invested anymore. Because it's been 7 goddamn years.
Yeah. Has it been that long?
Yeah. We're in season 7 of Pony.
Oh, wow.
And I got in on the ground fucking floor. Like, there are episodes in the hundreds where I start being like, yo, My Little Pony's fucking good. And I'm real fucking obnoxious about it for a little while. And that was the genesis of Bronyville. because they're like, yo, I need to go do a podcast with the friend so we can talk about horses. And here we are, following the arc all the way to the end.
Oh, wow. Daybreaker looks kind of badass.
Yeah.
Oh,
and what's interesting is that her colors are a direct inversion of Nightmare Moon's.
Yeah, that makes sense.
If you take Nightmare Moon and then invert her colors in Photoshop, you get Daybreaker.
She looks really kick-ass.
It's a good episode. Like, there have been really good episodes, but I've just fallen off the train.
I saw clips from the movie, and, like, the unicorn with the broken horn looks kind of badass. Not gonna lie.
It'll be interesting to see how that goes.
Kind of pissed about the marketing.
The marketing is shit. I really don't like the fact that they put the guest stars as the marquee versus the actual voice actresses who have voiced the characters for, at this point, like, nearly 8 years.
Yeah.
So it's like, all these people who are incidental characters who might appear for a little bit, like, Sia's character will show up at one part, maybe get kidnapped. And
like, Taye Diggs' character looks kind of hot.
Taye Diggs' character Topher. And
he's the cat guy, right?
The actress who does Solano, the bird pirate girl gal.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're gonna be primary characters for a bit.
For a second I thought you were gonna say cilantro or something. No, be like, and then she tastes really bad for like 10% of the population. Everyone else really loves nibbling on her wings.
Well, you know, eat the bird. The sea pony thing, like, turns out. Anyways, it's the characters that it looks like. Hey, it looks like there's probably not an evil queen for once, because there is the sea pony daughter, a sea pony princess, and a sea pony queen. Mm-hmm. And we know how these fucking movies go, right? It's always the queen's evil and the princess is good.
Yep.
Except it probably isn't the case, because it was the queen who saved her people from asshole McGee, who's trying to take over Canterlot by bringing her people under the sea and transforming into sea ponies to protect them. Because they were like hippogriffs before that.
Oh. Huh.
Yeah. So it's like, wow, they're actually not going to go down that trope route. So that's cool.
Yeah.
But again, the movie doesn't come out until October, like the first week in October, and we'll see. I'll catch it on like an early showing, as I tend to do, because I have the flexibility to do so. I can be like, I'm going to purchase a movie ticket in advance. I'm going to pick it up from the desk or the little automated machine. I don't have to talk to any human. I will go to the ticket guy, be like, here you go. They'll look at me, tell me my thing, and I'll walk off.
And you'll be like, my kids are in the car. Scamper, scamper, scamper.
No. Like, if anybody asks me, I'm like, look, I've run a convention for 5 goddamn years about this show. I'm gonna go see the movie.
I just see you walking up to the ticket person with your ticket, go, it's for my niece! And then going into the theater by yourself.
Nah, it's alright. But again, like,
I say that jokingly as an adult that, like, saw Zootopia at least twice in the theaters.
Well, remember when we went and saw it right before Fiesta that year?
Yeah.
There was this row of like 16 of us. 2 rows of us, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was this one old person like, oh, what are you guys doing here watching a cartoon movie for kids? And we're like,
yep.
Same as you, fucker. We're here to enjoy the movie. Except we want to fuck the rabbit and the fox.
Apparently, Bison Dad has a lot of fans.
Yeah,
also.
Bison Dad, Bison and then of Dad? Course the Fat
Chief
Furs.
Bogo.
Oh,
like, you know, have
Clawhauser.
Clawhauser.
Oh, yeah.
I love Clawhauser. He's so endearing.
Goodness. Yeah. So, you know, that movie had something for everybody.
Especially it has a fetish for everybody. There's the macro scene.
There's the angry gay sex. So, you know, you've got a little bit of everything. You got the gazelle, who's completely incidental to the film almost, but, you know, she's hippie and leggy. And
I love her.
Yeah.
I love Giselle.
Stripper tigers. You know, it's all good. Zootopia was really good and deserved its win. But yeah, I'm not gonna let anybody shame me about, oh, you're gonna go watch this movie. It's like, yeah, I go see a lot of movies.
Yeah. No, I wasn't saying that. I'm just
No. I
remembered a joke from years ago when Brony's buying the toys from the, at the time, girls' toy aisle and being like, it's for my niece.
Nah, I've... I got into that a little older and didn't give a fuck, really.
Speaking of which, I've bought so much stuff, literally, for my niece.
Yeah. I mean, she's coming soon.
Yes, coming soon to a womb near you. To a delivery room near...
Here in Florida.
In Florida, yes.
Like, you actually are buying things for your niece.
I don't know if I mentioned this before, but, like, so my sister's birthday is next week. And a few weeks ago I had said, so your birthday, do you want me to buy you something for you to enjoy, or do you want more baby stuff? Because, I mean, I know how expensive fucking baby stuff is, and you need so much stuff. So she, without a missing a beat, was like, baby stuff. I was like, okay, I'll go buy a bunch more stuff from the registry, because she has a baby registry on Amazon. And I went and I bought like half of her fucking registry. But then I went a few steps beyond that, and I bought a bunch of books that were not on the registry. And so I bought Ursula Vernon's Hamster Princess series, all four books in that series, which, you know, my niece is not going to be old enough to read them for, like, 5 years. But my sister, you know, she can read them bedtime stories and stuff, and they have cute illustrations. But I also bought her some books that I grew up with. So I got a 40th anniversary Mr. Men set. I got a Postman Pat book, which is a... I don't know if you guys know Postman Pat. It's a British book. So I know
who it is. I never read it, but I know who it is.
Okay. And, of course, I mean, everyone knows who Paddington Bear is. It's very big in Britain, of course. Actually, the creator of Paddington Bear just passed away recently. Yeah, he was in his 80s. As you can imagine, you know, because Paddington Bear has been around forever. So there was a lot of people posting tributes and posting things. I saw a cute drawing, a memorial drawing of, like, him holding Paddington's hand as they, like, walked towards the pearly gates, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I bought her, like, a set of Paddington Bear books and stuff like that. And my sister knows some of these because, I mean, you know, our mom was Scottish.
How much younger than you is your sister?
7 years.
Mm.
I was just doing the math of the birth dates. Yes, she's 7 years younger than me.
I love being an aunt. I love my nieces and nephew. So hopefully I get to see them in September. When we get done with here, I have to go price plane tickets, because my stepsister is getting married in September. And is actually, I've mentioned before, but she's actually marrying another gal. So this is the second lesbian marriage in my family.
Cool.
So it's, I don't know. I love that side of my family and just how liberal everybody is.
So, I mean, I probably mentioned this before, but I mean, my mom read a lot to my sister and I when we were very young. We both went to school already knowing how to read, or at least read above our grade level going into school, because my mom was always a book lover her whole life, and kind of instilled that in both my sister and I. And she and I have talked about this to be like, yeah, my sister's totally going to be reading a lot to her daughter, and we want to her to be a reader and everything too. I'm not gonna force them down her throat or anything like that if she doesn't like reading later on, but you know, you want to give a child a good start, and you know, that reading and writing comprehension early on is a real step up when you're starting school. So we're both pretty committed to that. So I'm like all about using my disposable income to fill up
a library.
My sister has a little children's library already. She has, they've already made her room and everything, and there's shelves on it. And they are rapidly filling up with books already.
Nice.
So my unborn niece already has a to-read pile.
She's starting life with a backlog.
Yes.
I mean, my parents were really strong into that, too. They always read... We had the Bernstein Bears books.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite books as a kid was The Spooky Old Tree.
I love Bernstein Bears.
It was one of their early reader books. And, yeah, they started me with that, and I had all these other... I had Star Wars story books, like the 19... Mm-hmm. I had, like, a 1980... I actually have a Star Wars Return of the Jedi book that is older than I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it came out in 83.
Yeah. But the storybook came out before the movie, probably.
Yeah, that tends
to happen.
Mm-hmm. I had the one that was, like, it was a storybook. It also had the vinyl record with it that, like, read the story along.
And so I had all that Star Wars stuff. I had just books. And Encyclopedia Brown and stuff like that. Which is kind of...
I read those.
All the Judy Blume. I read so much Judy Blume. That's a little later, but...
What's Judy... I haven't heard of Judy Blume.
Judy Blume? Oh, God.
Is that the author or the series?
No, that's the author. Okay. But she wrote, like, the Ramona books and a bunch of others.
Oh, I'm not familiar.
Yeah, they were... They're somewhere between early reader... They're, like, pre-YA. Mm-hmm. They're probably about, I don't know, 9, 10-ish? Something like that. Yeah.
Like, I read all the Hardy Boys books when I was about that age.
Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew, all that.
I never read Nancy Drew, but I read all the Hardy Boys that I could get my hands on. I had like a really nice set of the little hardcovers when I was a kid.
I read the Black Stallion books.
I've read a few of those too. Yeah.
I read every single Black Stallion book I can find, plus there are a couple of other horse novels of the same.
Black Beauty? Black Beauty was like 3 or 4 times I probably read.
I love Black Beauty.
I don't have I should get a copy of that just because, like, years after my Watership Down paperback fell apart, I went and bought myself a hardcover of it so I would have a copy in my collection.
I actually showed Sarah Watership Down, the movie, the other day. Yeah. I don't think he didn't quite. I also showed him Dark Crystal. Mm-hmm. But I sat him down and we watched those two, and I don't think he quite had the childhood love, but he was like, wow, you know, just, he can appreciate it without falling in love with it. Mm-hmm.
Watership Down and Secret of Nim were like the two big tunes I watched when I was a kid. And like, they're both violent as fuck. And it's really interesting. Like, what was it? It was Easter. It was one of the British channels. I don't remember if it was one of the BBCs or one of the other channels. But, like, every year on Easter, they show Watership Down. And, like, some people get really, really pissed off because, I mean, there's these bunnies killing each other.
But it's also bittersweet and, you know.
But I read Watership Down. My mom gave me that when I was, like, 7 years old. And that's a big book for a child to read.
It's a thick book.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did the same thing.
I read it so much the paperback fell in half because it was so thick.
We had a big, thick hardcover, like that thick. I mean, it was a big, thick hardcover of it. So I'd seen the movie a million of times. And then I read the book, and it's like there's more in the book than the movie.
Yeah. Did you guys ever read the Bunnicula series?
Yes.
Yes.
The celery stalks at midnight.
Yes.
Damn. And there was another author who I read the shit out of as a kid. And, of course, I read David Eddings. I read, the Black Cauldron series.
Mm-hmm.
I was super way ahead of my peers when it came to, like, early elementary reading.
And then my teenage years, I was reading the Star Trek and Doctor Who novels.
And I was reading Star Wars novels. I read literally every single book that Anne McCaffrey ever wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And then
I never
was
read
like,
her, actually.
And then I was like, fuck, what's the next book? What's the next book?
Because
Lackey was a big one for me.
Mercedes
Lackey,
yeah.
Yeah, like, those are ones that passed me by, I guess. I think because, like, Doctor Who for a time was bringing out 2 paperbacks a month. A New Adventure and a Missing Adventure. And I was just reading them constantly.
Lackey for me was mind-blowing because it was the first time I saw gay characters were actually portrayed as normal and this is just what they are and it's okay and all this other
shit. I heard she was very groundbreaking like that.
And I'm like, it was... Because I didn't really struggle with my sexuality as a kid. It was just, I knew to keep it on the down low, but it's not like it caused me any particular personal angst.
But you don't see it anywhere. So, like, having that exposure to it in a book.
Mm-hmm. Well, the main character of one of her biggest series was a gay dude. And it's like, wow. And... Okay, maybe it's not a lesbian, but it's still a gay character, and it's no big deal.
Yeah.
It was just like, holy shit, this is great.
Yeah.
And...
It's that kind of thing is like the whole representation matters. You know, to a young bi girl growing up, and you read these stories that has a gay main character in it, and that means a lot to you. It's why, I'm trying to read more books from people of color. Of course, I read a lot of gay and lesbian fiction because of what I publish, a lot of gay and lesbian fiction. This is why, diversity in book publishing is, a really big deal.
Yeah, it's a huge deal.
Like, everybody should have something where they can identify with the characters in it.
Yeah, 100%. And anytime people go back about representation, it's like, I just have to call up that feeling of when I first read Vaniel and everything, and it's like, this is okay, this is me, you know, this is, it's huge.
Mm-hmm.
And even to this day, when somebody's in a show like The Flash, and like the police captain is fucking gay and makes a quip about his, I think, to-be husband saying... You know, watch his weight. And it's very off the cuff, and it's still a little thrill of, one of us!
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or the guy in the season 4 of Arrow, the Felicity's assistant.
Oh, yeah. When he starts talking about his husband.
Oh,
yeah.
God, what's her name? The main character in Legends of Tomorrow. The new captain.
Yeah.
The assassin lady.
White Canary.
Name. I can't remember.
Yeah, she was bi in Arrow too. But yeah,
because she was hooked up with Talia al Ghul.
I think she's actually gay though. Yeah.
But so
she's kind of been established to like only be.
She dated Ollie.
Yeah, she dated Ollie.
Okay. Well,
it was probably because of the money.
There's this great episode where like the end of one season, Rip has to do this thing because the Wave Rider is about to be destroyed, and he basically scatters the rest of the crew through time, and they all land in different time periods. The Atom ends up in like 65 million years ago, and with dinosaurs and shit like that. And White Canary lands in the Middle Ages, and they're gonna burn her as a witch because she has seduced all the women in the village with her evil wiles, and like, so they're leading her up to like the stake or whatever, and like the all the women in the circle, and she's kind of like winking at them and stuff. It's a really cool scene, and of course she gets rescued.
Yeah,
I don't remember details.
Well, it would be very difficult for her to be the captain of the Wave Rider in further seasons if she was burned at the stake.
Right. Yeah.
It was interesting because thinking back, I didn't have a lot of gay representation in any of the books I read. It was in like fan fiction primarily, and a lot of my first like explorations into gay fiction was probably Waterways or like your stories, Fuzz. I'm sure that you appreciate that. It's like, yeah,
that's really kind of cool. I forget sometimes that you've read my stories back in the day.
I read your stories on the net before they were any physical and ever knowing you.
Yeah.
And so, like, between that and, like, Waterways, because Waterways came out a few years ago at this point.
I want to say 04.
Yeah. And 04 was, like, my, like, crisis of self year.
Yeah.
Where I ended up out of state for 6 months and all that crazy shit.
I love hearing about it. Like, Kyle gets so many comments about Waterways, even today. And It's so cool, like, because I'm often standing next to him at the dealer's table, and somebody buys his new books, and then they also bring all like the old books that they've already bought and stuff like that, and you know, just hearing his fans telling him like how much Waterways meant to him, or Vol is one, and Out of Position is a big one for some of the younger fans, as it came out like 5 years after Waterways did, but like. That was like a life-changing book for a lot of furries. And like, it was them like, oh, I like this furry stuff, but then also like kind of dealing with their sexuality when they were like probably too young to be reading Waterways, but you know. And it's just really cool. And part of what I love about this fandom, and particularly being involved in the book publishing aspect of it, is stories like that, you mm-hmm. know, and knowing people will read some of these books and have that kind of experience and stuff. So I'm reading one of Kyle's books now that we'll be publishing, and like, so I'm just, it's gonna be another one kind of in that vein, and I'm just really excited about it.
It's so hard to articulate exactly the notes it hits in you when you've been kind of this. I mean, sure, you've talked to people and you've read like news articles and all this other stuff, but here it is being portrayed in a story, in a fictional universe, where you can kind of put yourself, find things that you identify with this character, and it almost becomes you after a way, you know, in the story. Because identifying, representation is kind of like you get to be in the story in some ways, if that makes a sense.
That's another cool thing about female lead characters these days. It's becoming more of a thing, you know, like the Wonder Woman movie mm-hmm. doing so well, Rey being the central character of the new Star Wars movies, and like I'd seen like criticism of like when the Avengers poster comes out and like everyone is doing a pose or something like that, and Black Widow has been Photoshop adjusted to show her ass and her breasts at the same time and, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. But then you look at the teaser trailer for Star Wars 8, and it's just you see Rey at the bottom, and she's holding up the lightsaber, and she just looks totally badass and not like sexualized in any way, just total action hero. And in the shadow of the lightsaber at the top is Luke on one side and Kylo on the other. And it's a really cool teaser poster if you haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it, but I can Google it.
Yes, yeah, go check it out. It's a very striking image, and it definitely harkens back to some of the other Star Wars films. But you know, in the 13th Doctor, it was like, I've seen a couple videos of like people reacting to the casting video and like being so excited and saying there's going to be so many little girls that are dressed as the Doctor for Halloween. And I saw somebody else was talking about like their 10-year-old son or something like that, and the Doctor being a girl is not going to stop this kid from cosplaying as the new Doctor.
Yeah. It's good times because
yeah.
more people are being represented in the popular media. And it's not going to change.
That one? The like, couple?
Yes.
So let me see, Shiva.
Hold on. I'm pulling up the full version of it.
Yeah, because Google.
I just was pulling up previews.
Yeah, and see, that's a callback to a very early, like, original Star Wars, where it has Luke holding up the lightsaber, except he's got his, like, chest exposed, and Leia's at his feet. It's this very, we didn't know quite what this movie's going to be about.
It's almost like the old, like, Robert E. Howard Tarzan kind of look with the...
I also like this one with her kind of with the.
Oh yeah, staff. They did a whole set of those with all the different characters. It was cool with the lightsaber. One of the characters, it was replaced with a horse cock.
There's also one where it's Judy.
Oh, the lightsaber! Yeah,
Judy holding a horse cock.
Oh, okay.
But There was also the version that's the portrait of Leia, but like it's just her. It's just like the general.
Yeah, I like that one too. That's a great.
And it's like,
you know,
fuck Carrie Fisher. No,
it's like my heart. It cannot.
Speaking of people who have unfortunately died between films, there was some discussion about what to do with the character of Chekhov, since unfortunately Anton Yelchin was very sadly killed.
Such a fucked up sad way too.
Yeah, after Star Trek Beyond was filmed, and people were like, oh, are they gonna kill Chekhov in the movies? Are they gonna recast Chekhov? And I saw a really good suggestion the other day. You know, don't recast him. Don't kill him off. Just transfer him to another ship. Say he got promoted. He's on another ship and he's happily living his life somewhere else. And then you replace him with a new character that fits. The point that we're making was the reason for Chekhov as a character originally was in the 60s. The show started in 1966. So 4 years previously, you'd had the Cuban Missile Crisis. We're right in the heart of the Cold War. Russia is our enemy. And Gene Roddenberry put a Russian on the bridge. Because in the future,
things have settled out.
All the world is, it's one Earth, right? We're all friends now.
Yeah.
So somebody suggested that Star Trek should take the legacy of what the Chekhov character represented in his original creation, and the new character should be somebody like a Muslim woman.
Mm.
Some like who are the bad guys
now
in the 21st century? You know, who's our country fighting now?
Yeah,
and it is terrorism.
Who is the extreme other?
Right, and you know, Star Trek can basically make the same statement that it did in the 60s by putting a Muslim in that position on the show.
I like that idea.
And I thought that was a really cool idea. Like, honor the Chekhov character and also do something new to represent our 21st century.
See,
concerns.
In that case, I wouldn't necessarily say a Muslim woman, but a Muslim man, because they're more the face of the antagonist. I mean,
right.
Representation would be great in this case, but right now the bad guy mostly is Muslim men.
Right.
So if you would do a Muslim man instead of that, because that's the face of the bad guy, I think that would hold more of... Because often Muslim women are portrayed as kind of being not a threat, but kind of, in some ways, also
lacking
victim.
Agency, also.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they could definitely do something good with a Muslim woman in the whole with having agency and having a position of authority on the bridge. But I definitely see your point about a Muslim man if you want. Because
that's the face of the enemy right now. At least it's being portrayed.
Like, and I'm wondering if, you know, these are big budget blockbuster movies. So I'm wondering if they would be brave enough to, like, take that step and do something like that.
I mean, they have already stated they're not going to recast Chekhov.
Okay, good. I didn't know if anything official had
basically
been decided.
Like, after he died, basically they were like, yo, we're not going to recast him.
And such an awful way to die, too.
I know. Poor guy.
Yeah. And it was a car that was under recall.
Yep.
And actually, my car was under recall. I got it back from the shop today.
Mm-hmm.
The Takata brand explosive bolts, apparently. It was an airbag issue that affects like 42 million cars in the U.S. alone.
Wow.
But it's more common in tropical areas. It's had more issues in like Malaysia and Indonesia because basically with the right combination of moisture and heat, which we have moisture and heat here in Texas, pretty bad, but not as bad as areas closer to the equator.
Yeah.
They've had times where the explosive bolts have failed in a way where when the airbags deploy, instead of getting airbags, you get a shotgun to the face.
Oh.
Basically,
the bolts itself.
The bolts flying out. The bolts explode that basically are the inflators that do the airbags. They send flechettes through the bag.
Ugh.
So not only do you not get an airbag, you get bits of molten metal in the process too. And
along with your steering column and whatever else is going on in the rack.
So basically, 42 million cars in the U.S. are under recall. So if you've bought a car in any, well, my car was from 2006. So if you have a car, you might want to check and see if your car is under recall, because pretty much any dealership will do the recall work for free.
So I'm going to throw out an unpaid for sponsor announcement, the Carfax app. Carfax is a service that you can pay for if you want and get a full history of a car, but they have an app which is free. It's available on at least the Android and iPhone. I know because I've had it on multiple phones now. You pop in your VIN and it gives you like all the maintenance service history of your car, and it will actually give you pop-up warnings if there's an open recall on your car. And then once the recall's taken care of and the people at the shop update that in your car's entry, then it shows that your car has had this recall taken care of.
Nice.
Because, again, mine's an 06. It was bought from a third-party seller.
And it had not had it taken care of yet,
no.
I guess? Okay.
Well, they didn't have record of it, so they did it anyway.
Good.
And I got my new keys.
If it had been done, there would probably have been a record of it, because Carfax's app shows fucking the pre-sale check from my car in 2005 before it rolled into the sales floor, basically.
Wow.
So,
yeah. It goes all the way back.
Also, I'm going to say I had a really good experience with Audi Dallas. So, it turns out that... So, I have a luxury vehicle. Audis are nice. And those vehicles have higher costs associated with it. Benefit of privilege in that case, that, well, I get the privilege of paying more for stuff. And basically, we were trying to get replacement keys because we only had one key, and we needed to get a smart key and a backup key.
Right.
And one place was like, it's $350 and this, that, and the other, and it was going to be $600 to get a key and it's programming and all this other shit. And I called the other one, and they were like, no, the key's $250. And the programming is $100. And then I called Audi Dallas, and they were like, the keys are $160 and programming is $80. And it's like, well, there we go.
You know where I'm taking my car, right?
Yeah, and it's a nice dealership. It's off of Lemon, and it's this weird little area. It's getting gentrified to hell. They've got all these expensive-ass car dealerships right nearby. But you also have homeless issues. You've got some run-down apartments that are getting rebuilt. It's an area undergoing gentrification.
Right.
So you have this mix of extremely expensive car dealerships next to run-down old apartments. It's weird.
A lot of areas like that in Dallas right now where they're building up some areas.
And it's near the neighborhood.
Yeah. I recognize the Lemon.
Yeah.
I've been down there a couple times.
I've marched down that street. in the Pride Parade one year. Anyways. So make sure your car's not under any recalls, because your dealerships will do that work for free for the most part, and you can prevent dying.
Yeah, Tieran and I both had both of our cars had recalls on the passenger side airbag.
Yeah.
As I think, I don't remember exactly what was wrong with it. I think it might fail to deploy or something like that. And we didn't get it done right away because we rarely have passengers. But like 1 year before AC, like we both got them taken care of.
I had that issue with my Rabbit, and when I was in my vehicle accident, my airbags did not deploy.
Oh, really?
Oh.
Yeah. I had an airbag error. The airbag sensor on the passenger side had gotten broken. Because reasons. And basically, when I was in that collision, my airbags did not deploy. So,
not even your driver's side?
Nope.
Oh.
Good thing it was low speed and I was wearing my seatbelt. Always wear your seatbelt, kids.
Yeah.
Because, man.
All you have to do is look at my face is to know why you wear fucking seatbelts.
Yeah.
I've got that big-ass scar.
Or...
That's what this is from, a car wreck when I was a kid.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You may have told me that at some point, but I'm not sure I remember.
Yeah. I've got a... It's faded, but when I was 9, we got T-boned. Ooh. I was sitting in the back passenger seat. We got hit in basically front passenger seat in front corner, and I got sprayed in the face with glass.
Oh.
So that's this. And it used to be a lot worse. It used to be. I barely can remember it now, but that's where this, and I've got a snip on my cheek, has came from.
I can't see one on the cheek.
It's because I wear my glasses, but yeah, I've got one right there. But yeah, that's that.
Yeah. It's just like a little bump on your forehead, though. I can barely see it.
Now it is.
Yeah.
Trust me, when I was a teenager.
Oh, yeah.
I used to wear my hair like combed over that side so that it hid, you know. But after that, yeah, if I hadn't been wearing my seatbelt, I would have been ejected through the car. I had big ass bruises, and so did my sister and my mom too. And they were on the opposite side of the car. But I was seriously, I would have gone flying.
That sucks.
Well, you didn't, and here you are today.
Yeah,
I'm just saying that's why I'm a huge fan of seatbelts.
So we went from book nerdcast to car talk.
Well, we started with like a huge talk. So
we started with Who First.
So this episode has been Who First, and then Pack South, and then pony stuff, and then books, and then now here we are about car stuff. And we are actually at an hour and a half already. It's 10:43 p.m. right now. And so
I do have to work tomorrow. So.
Yeah.
And it's an in-the-office day, so I have to wake up earlier because I have to get in the train.
So we're going
to
wrap this up. As always, this is Knockcast. You can send us emails about anything to knockcast@foxzephyrs.com. People, you know, you don't. If you don't send us emails, you get episodes like this, which I'm sure people don't mind all that much. And we have our Tumblr, knockcast.tumblr.com. You can find me on Twitter at Saverin Drake.
You can find me on Twitter at Fuzzwolf. Or go to fuzzwolf.com and all my contact info is there, including links to For Planet and Bad Dog Books and their associated Twitters.
I'm on Twitter as Chimera, K-H-Y-M-A-E-R-A. I'm also on Telegram on that. You can find me on F-A as Shiva Cat with a K. So that's pretty much where you'll find me these days.
Yep. All right, and we have a Patreon if you guys want to toss some money our way, like the show, patreon.com/knockcast. Check it out. Other than that, let's wrap it up, and we will have another episode next week, probably. On that note, good night.
And big balls.